You're listening to Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Welcome to Sleep Stories for Equestrians. I'm your host, Ashley Winch. We're so happy you're here to relax and unwind. If you fall asleep and miss the story, we will recap it at the beginning of the next episode. We've also selected and edited these stories for ultimate relaxation, removing any stressful bits without affecting the story's integrity, so you can focus on drifting off to sleep. With that, let's settle down and prepare for our story. The gates are closed. The horses sleep. The day's work done. The chores complete. Now let us rest, our bodies and minds. Drift off to sleep and close your eyes. It's time for us to turn down for the night. Now let's breathe in, breathe out, and turn off the light. One more time, breathe out, breathe in. Now, let us begin. On the last episode of Sleep Stories for Equestrians, we met some of the elf's furry friends. Tonight, we begin Chapter 3. Master breaks me in, and I race a boy on a bicycle. My days were spent very much in the same way until I was a little over 3 years old. I got to be quite clever playing at horses with Master, and I soon learnt to walk in a steady, graceful way, much to my mother's joy, for she did not like to see me floundering about. Both my parents were fast racing trotting horses, and Eros and I were ambitious to do them credit, and also to please Master, who had already begun to train me to go fast. When I had first put on my iron shoes, I didn't like them at all. They felt heavy, and I felt clumsy, and I seemed to stumble about in the same uncertain way I had seen Evelyn, Ricketts' little daughter, do when she put on what I thought were iron shoes, but what she called roller skates, and tried to walk across the stable yard. She stumbled and fell about all over the place, but she always jumped up again with a merry laugh and struggled on as before, and very soon she began to tumble less frequently, and in the end went gliding over the yard like a brave little girl that she was. Evelyn's perseverance made me make up my mind not to be beaten, and I very soon got not only to mind my shoes, but to be grateful for them, as Eros and Mother told me I should be when they heard me grumbling, for they protected my feet from the hard, rough ground and kept them from being cut and torn by the numberless sharp little stones, which I soon found it was impossible to avoid when Master began to take me on the roads. I was not always to wander by the side of Mother and tread only on soft green carpets. When Master considered me strong enough to draw a carriage, he harnessed me to one of his lightest racing wagons, about 50 pounds in weight, and which you can see in miniature harnessed to Tiny, a young friend of mine, with little Evelyn sitting in it and holding the reins. She was the only child about the place who was small enough to get in, and even she was rather a tight fit, I felt a bit nervous when we set off for my first real drive. I was very anxious to do credit to Deer Master's training, and also I felt very responsible for the precious burden I was carrying in the wagon behind me. If I were the cause of anything happening to Master, I felt that I would never dare to face Mother and Eros and Chanticleer again, for they loved him, even as I did, and they felt it a little hard that he gave me so much more personal attention. And I always felt Chanticleer was a trifle jealous. With a plain snaffle bit between my teeth, instead of the severe curb most driving people use, Master and I started off for our first drive, and I went just as well and carefully as I ever could. My mouth being quite comfortable and my head free, for of course I wore no cruel bearing rein, I felt no inclination to pull, and I paid prompt attention to Master's gentle pressure on my reins and his soft whoa, whoa. We had a lovely drive, and my heart was overflowing with joy when we were safely back in the stable yard, and I heard my master say to Ricketts, as he kindly patted my head, "The elf has gone splendidly." This was indeed praise, and I made up my mind to keep up my good character. Little Evelyn brought me sugar, which I enjoyed very much, for I didn't mind taking it from her, and indeed she would have been very grieved if I had. It wasn't like taking it from Master in return for a caress. I felt in very good spirits, and so grateful to Master for training me so kindly. Mother had told me how horses are generally broken in, and I didn't think it was a nice way at all. She told me that the usual way of breaking a young horse is to harness him beside an older one in a very heavy carriage with several men driving and several others running by its side and leading with long ropes and shouting and gesticulating wildly. This method of breaking horses in is very terrifying to them if their owners only knew it, and I feel dreadfully sorry for all my friends who have had to go through this kind of training, and I do wish they and all horses could have a clever and sympathetic master like mine. So please, people who read this tale, as you go on, for I have much to tell you yet. And then, when you come to have horses of your own, or to train for other people, you will escape the degradation of having to use that brute force in your training, alike deteriorating to both teacher and taught, and you will learn to work on the affection and intelligence of the creatures in the animal world, and thereby learn many a lesson of noble effort and patience forbearance. The ruling power in all Master's lessons was and is love, and the effect was and is still wonderful. No creature about the place, and there are many, has the least bit of fear of him, and the humblest will take liberties with Master, which it would not dare to take with the stable lads. So sure are all of kind and humane treatment, their helplessness appeals to him, as all such living creatures in their blind, mute trustfulness must appeal to the soul that is truly great. So again, learn as you read, Master always urged me to go fast, but he never let me get tired. He only allowed me to go quite short distances at a time, scarcely ever more than a few hundred yards. He never even flicked me with a whip, but just spoke firmly and gently to me, telling me what to do, and I was so anxious to please him that I seldom made a mistake. Sometimes I got frightened by things I saw on the road, and I neighed, "Please, Master, will that white thing hurt me, or is that barking little dog going to bite me?" Master quite understood and coaxed me past these imaginary dangers, and as no harm ever came to me, I soon grew not to mind the things I saw, and went boldly and bravely on my way. Of course, I kept to the plan of neighing to Master when I saw suspicious-looking objects about, but he never tired of encouraging me to go on, and I always trusted him and obeyed his voice. When I got used to going really fast, Master often let me race boys we met on the road who were riding bicycles, and I always beat them. Once, a poor-looking errand boy tried very hard to keep in front of me, with somewhat disastrous results. Strapped to his machine, he had a basket containing several eggs and a nice plump-looking chicken. When Master and I overtook him, and he saw how fast I could go, he evidently at once made up his mind not to be beaten and rode at a tremendous speed to keep up with me. Master, knowing how difficult the little fellow, for he looked little, though I heard him tell Master afterwards that he was 14, would find this, and fearing a tumble, kept me well to the side of the road to give him plenty of room. It was well he did, for I got excited that I think I nearly flew for a few minutes. Then came a crash, and boy, basket, bicycle, and eggs rolled all over the ground. The broken eggs spread themselves in a wild confusion on the roadside. "Whoa, whoa," said Master, and I stopped instantly and stood perfectly still. Master turned me round, for I had got well in front of the boy during the last few seconds, and together we surveyed the debris. I was deeply interested in the scene before me. There sat the boy in the middle of the road, his thin, pinched face full of amazement. The broken eggs, as if trying to make the most of time, raced each other towards a common goal, and all was quite silent. For some few seconds, Master did not speak, and I noticed that the little lad's lip began to quiver, and then, slowly, very slowly, as if reluctant to fall, tears rolled down his thin, white face. I expected Master would at once give the child money and tell him to repair his loss, and I was very much surprised when, after kindly asking him if he were hurt and receiving the reply, "No, sir," to hear my master say, "What are you going to do, my lad?" What could the boy do, I thought, for he was evidently much too poor to replace the eggs himself, and even the fowl. For 2 or 3 seconds, the boy did not speak, and then he said, "I bet I'll have to do a slope, mister. Suppose you couldn't drive round and tell my governor it was an accident?" And I thought I detected a pleading note in the boy's voice. But it was not an accident, said Master, and he kept his eyes fixed on the boy. The governor would believe a gentleman like you, even if I lied, and I could tell from Master's voice that he was a bit sad. Never mind, mister. I'll get out of this mess somehow, answered the boy, and he picked up the few eggs which were not broken and placed them in the basket and prepared to mount his bicycle again. Fortunately, it had not suffered in the fall. I was disappointed. Was Master going to do nothing for the poor little chap? Please give him something, Master. And he said, It's all right, Elf. I'm just thinking out the best way to help the lad. And I at once felt remorseful, for I hadn't ever known Master to lose an opportunity of showing a kindness or forsake either a human or an animal in distress. How old are you? Suddenly asked Master, as he placed a detaining hand on the boy who was about to ride off. 14, mister. And a gleam of light flickered over the lad's face. Perhaps, after all, the gentleman was going to do something for him. How much would the eggs and chicken cost? The chicken be 3 and 3, and there was half a crown's worth of eggs. 5 and 9 in all, sir. Master put his hand in his pocket and drew out some money. It was all gold, and the boy's eyes glistened. Was the gentleman going to pay the damages and give a tip for himself, too? I did wish Master would. The lad looked so pinched and hungry. 5 and 9, said Master, and I have nothing less than a sovereign. I could get you change, mister, and the boy's voice sounded distinctly pleading. Right, said Master, and he scribbled down his name and address on a slip of paper and handed it to the boy, now a happy little chap, saying to him as he did so, What's your name? Bob Jones, mister. Well, Bob, you return 14 and 3 pence to me as soon as you can. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And off went the lad as quickly as he could. I expect to make up for lost time. Master hadn't even told Bob to keep the 3 pence for himself, and he did look so hungry. I was disappointed, for I felt rather a liking for the boy who had tried to beat me on his bicycle. Most of them gave up really soon, and I loved the sport of a race. When I got back to the stable and told Eros about the race and what had happened, he said, Master'll never see the change for that sovereign, I know. But I felt differently. Bob Jones had an honest face. And friends, you shall hear later on which of us is right in our opinion of him, Eros or I. Thank you for joining us on Sleep Stories for Equestrians. Allow this gentle music to carry you off to dreamland.